This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
You've heard a lot of news about protests in the Arctic. People have been protesting the fact that the Russians are going up with one of the first drilling rigs to grab some more fossil fuels out of the Arctic and make even more ice melt. We have on the line Stephanie Goodwin. She's the BC director for Greenpeace Canada. She's been very active on this file. I met her on the Rainbow Warrior a few nights ago. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you.
So let's get an update. What is happening now with, and how many people are there in this protest?
So we originally had almost, a month ago today, four protesters that were trying to get on to Gazprom's oil rig in order to peacefully protest fossil fuel extraction from the Arctic. And what ended up happening was those activists that were trying to get up on the oil rig were arrested, as well as everyone else involved and everyone on board our ship. And that means that there were 28 activists, including, and then a videographer and a photographer, who were all arrested at gunpoint by the Russian military and taken to police detention while they towed our ship to port.
This did happen once before in the early 1990s. Then it was the KGB who dragged a Greenpeace ship in. The protest was against the dumping of nuclear reactors at Novozemlya up in the Arctic. Eventually the ship was released and the crew. What is going on now diplomatically? Are the Canadian government getting involved in any way?
Well, our ship, she's called the Arctic Sunrise. She has been seized by the Russian government, and it flies under a Dutch flag. So the Dutch government is following the appropriate channels to intervene with the Russian government to have that ship released. And then in terms of the activists themselves, they are currently under charge of piracy right now, and they are being detained for 2 months while the Russian government conducts an investigation. It's a very, very serious charges of piracy, which our analysis is that it doesn't hold up. That kind of charge does not hold up under Russian or international law, which, you know, Vladimir Putin agrees with us in certain respects on that. And some of the interesting things that have been happening over the last couple of days, because we've been trying to garner as much international support for this as possible, is a few days ago, Hillary Clinton said, while she was in England, that she doesn't understand why there isn't already more international outcry towards the Russian government's treatment of these activists and charging them with piracy. And then just yesterday, a number of Nobel Peace laureates collectively wrote a letter, and that includes Desmond Tutu from South Africa, wrote a letter to Vladimir Putin in support of the Arctic 30 and asking for their release. We're not saying that our Arctic 30 aren't willing to face the consequences of their actions. However, we believe in facing reasonable consequences for our reasonable, peaceful action.
And my understanding is this rig doesn't move. So piracy, you usually think of boarding a ship and taking it over. This is hardly a ship. Can you describe the rig itself?
It's a large oil drilling rig in the Arctic. It's not exactly the same, but if you were to imagine what people can best identify with is if you were to imagine some of the oil rigs a few years ago from the Gulf of Mexico with the BP oil spill. While not exactly similar, you know, it's a rig that looks in some ways in the same ball field as that. And our activists had done this previously. We were just going to board the oil rig and peacefully protest in order to gain attention and to stop the oil drilling so that we could stop the drilling in the Arctic, stop resource extraction in the Arctic so that we can actually start moving in the right direction towards mitigating climate change.
And I believe Greenpeace put out a report suggesting how much greenhouse gases could come out if we go ahead and drill Arctic resources. Do you know about that report?
Well, what we do have is we have an Energy Revolution report, which talks about the degree to which the globe, as well as the Canadians, can get off of fossil fuels and how we can do that over a period of time, over the next 50 years. We're not saying that we're going to eliminate all fossil fuel use over the next 50 years, but we can significantly reduce it so that the kinds of fossil fuels that we'll be using won't include the dirtiest, most dangerous, most expensive kinds, which are Arctic oil drilling, offshore oil and gas drilling, the deep sea stuff, the Alberta tar sands. Those are the most expensive, the most dangerous, and the dirtiest when you consider the full life cycle of the fossil fuel that's being extracted and used at the consumer end.
And one of my concerns, and I'm sure the concerns of millions of people, is what happens if there's a spill up there in the winter? There's no way they're going to be able to clean anything up, is there?
Well, what I know is a few years ago, during the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, I went down to do an on-the-ground investigation. And some of the things I learned were that it's very difficult to clean up an oil spill. Some of the methods that are most pervasively used in cleaning up oil spills are very, very rudimentary. You know, the use of oil booms and that being a primary way of being able to clean up oil is just simply not an effective tool if it doesn't have a whole complement of other tools that can be used. And what I learned down there was that companies consider it a professional success if after an oil spill they're able to clean up 15% of the oil that's spilled. That's 15%. And so when we think about something like the Arctic region, a place that has very little infrastructure, very little support, I would imagine that that success rate for cleanup after an oil spill would be reduced further. And what we know is that there are so many unpredictable variables when it comes to an oil spilling from an offshore oil rig, particularly one in the Arctic, that it quite frankly scares me, the idea that we could potentially be facing an oil spill.
And again, in the Gulf of Mexico, they said a lot of the oil disappeared because there were oil-eating bacteria in those warm waters. Those aren't going to be found in any sort of numbers in the Arctic waters, I wouldn't think.
Well, and in the Gulf of Mexico during that oil spill, one of the things that the government and BP made heavy use of was dispersants, which is a chemical compound that when you put it into the water, it interacts with spilled oil products, and it causes the spilled oil to fall to the floor of the sea. It doesn't actually dissolve or disperse the oil. All it does is it makes it disappear from the surface so that, A, you're not seeing it on the surface, and B, so that it's not hitting landfall, because once it hits landfall, it's more difficult for a company to clean up. However, that doesn't tell us anything about what might be happening on the bottom of the ocean today.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith, speaking with Stephanie Goodwin from Greenpeace Canada. And I want to bring out the point, too, that there are a couple of Americans on board, are there?
There are an American on board. There are two Canadians on board as well. Yeah, their nationalities represented, you know, from all over the world. Our crews are notoriously from all over the world. One of our crew, which is the captain, Peter Wilcox, has been, you know, has been sailing Greenpeace ships for decades and was actually the captain of the ship when it was seized by the KGB in the 1990s, and then as well was also on the ship on the very first Rainbow Warrior in 1985 when it was bombed by the French Secret Service, and one of our photographers lost their lives. So he's had quite a bit of experience with dealing with governments who have irrational and or with reactions that are disproportionate to the situation.
I ask that because, you know, if somebody grabs an American in the streets of Iran, we hear about it every day on the front pages. It's good that Hillary Clinton has spoken up, but there could be a lot more to be said by all of these countries about their nationals being grabbed. Was that ship in international waters?
Well, the ship was in international waters when it was seized, so that, according to our legal team and legal analysis, is illegal to be seizing a ship in international waters. And my understanding is that, you know, different crew members have had their various governments making diplomatic overtures to the Russian government in order to get their folks released and apply the appropriate amount of pressure. Because it's important for us to remember that our issue is not necessarily with the police. Our issue isn't necessarily with the Russian government. Our issue is with protecting the Arctic. And what we have to remember is that our primary purpose is to protect the Arctic so that space can be kept a healthy and safe ecosystem and provide its maximum contribution to stopping a runaway climate change. And so for us, it's how do we continue to campaign and not stop what we're doing in the face of the kind of absurd charges that we're seeing coming towards the Arctic 30.
And the executive director of Greenpeace International made a very brave proposal, I thought. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Our international executive director, Kumi Naidu, South African man, has sent a letter to Vladimir Putin requesting the release of the 30 detainees and offering as a guarantee that those 30 activists would return for trial. He offered himself. He offered to go and live in Russia himself while the Russian government conducts their investigation and readies themselves for trial. So he's willing to put himself on the line in order so that others can be free today.
What sort of conditions are these people being held in the Arctic 30? Are they in a common Russian jail?
They're being held in a Russian jail. Their conditions vary, but they are receiving, you know, relatively healthy conditions, although details differ depending on who the detainees are, and I don't have specifics on those.
Okay, and the real point behind all this is that this is just early days in this whole Arctic drilling thing. I know Kuminadu was involved in an actual action off of Greenland trying to stop Arctic drilling. The Canadians are hot to trot to get out there. It's going to be a worldwide rush. China's interested. We just can't have this happen. First, the oil industry melts all the ice, and now they want to go in and melt the rest of it.
Yeah, what we know is that we're in it for the long game. We don't think that there is a moment to lose. We don't have a moment to lose in terms of fighting to save our planet, and the urgency couldn't be higher at this point. So for us, we are doing everything we can to get our Arctic 30 out of jail, but not stop our campaigning at all on trying to stop runaway climate change and trying to protect the Arctic. Because what we know now is that the link between democracy and the environmental struggle couldn't be closer. And so everything that we do to protect the Arctic is about being able to generate not just protection for the Arctic, but also opening up that democratic space, because it's through a healthy, robust arena for debate, disagreement, and protest that we can actually arrive at creative solutions to environmental problems that everyone can sign on to. For us, the struggle for both remains really, really clear and really urgent, and we're not stopping either.
Well, Stephanie Goodwin, we have listeners around the world. What can they do to help free the Arctic 30?
Anybody who is concerned about the Arctic 30 and wants to help out can visit our website. You can go to greenpeace.org, and you can go to your relevant country website, and there'll be a take action page, and there are also other opportunities that'll be listed on the webpage as well for communicating with our detainees and for taking action in your own home community. What we know is that today there are a number of actions happening around the world to mark the 1 month anniversary that our activists have been in detention today.
Well, as we wrap up, could you also just tell us about the action that just happened off the decks of the Rainbow Warrior in your city of Vancouver?
Certainly. How do we bring home the kinds of work we've been doing in the Arctic? Well, it's the dirty, dangerous, and expensive fossil fuel production. We have some of that right here in our own backyard, and it's the Alberta tar sands. And what we know in British Columbia on the West Coast is that British Columbia is poised to become a carbon superhighway for transporting the Alberta tar sands, coal, and liquid natural gas. And so yesterday, in order to, with over 130 First Nations opposing the transportation of these kinds of oil products through their territories in British Columbia, and the majority of British Columbians not wanting it, we decided to stand up and take action. Down here in the Lower Mainland around Vancouver, Kinder Morgan is an oil pipeline company that has been shipping oil products from Alberta and other places for quite a number of years, and they've been increasing their importing of bitumen from the Alberta tar sands to export it to Asia. They currently have a proposal to triple their capacity of Alberta tar sands coming to Vancouver's harbor, and what that would equate to is 400 oil tankers coming into our harbor a year. For us, that is an untenable position. So yesterday morning, 16 activists went into the facility, the Kinder Morgan facility, and shut it down for the day. They shut it down by locking themselves to the front gate. They shut it down by getting up on two of their big container tanks, and off of one of the tanks hanging a large banner, sending a direct message to Prime Minister Stephen Harper saying, "Harper, no tar sands pipeline." On the other tank, activists painted on it, "Stop tar sands." And then down near the docking facility, because this is where big tankers come up to the dock and load up with tar sands bitumen, we had four activists down there blocking the dock, two of them climbing up on pipes and being ready to spend the night if necessary in order to send a clear message that the expansion of the tar sands is not on.
And listeners, what you have to realize is that Vancouver is one of the busiest ports. It is the busiest port in Canada, and it's gorgeous. People come from all over the world to visit it. Just one of these tankers, if it crashes or gashes open full of bitumen, the stuff sinks to the bottom. There's no way to clean it up. You can't put booms around it. What are you going to do, drain the whole harbor and then scrape the bottom with machines? It's just absolutely insane to be doing this. So I'm hoping people will get on board to stop that as well. We've been talking with Stephanie Goodwin from Greenpeace Canada. Thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thanks very much.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Get links to follow up on today's interviews in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.info. Find out how to support this program at our website, ecoshock.org. Download a ton of free MP3s while you're there. Pass them out far and wide. We're out of time. Thank you for listening. I'm Alex Smith.